The snake fungal disease was first discovered in Illinois snake populations in 2011. Dr. Matt Allender is leading a team of researchers at the University of Illinois in an effort to crack the code of this disease, which infects not just wild snakes, but much-loved pets as well. While the researchers experiment with a variety of possible treatments, Dr. Matt Fraker from the Prairie Oak Veterinary Center points out that this disease is part of a disturbing trend. Fraker says there are actually three fungal plagues that have devastated animal populations in recent times.
The first one that was really sort of shocking in its global reach was chytridiomycosis, caused by Batrachochytrium dendrobatitis.
That sounds deadly.
It is. And it's affected global frog populations. In fact, one of the sort of the iconic organisms struck down by this was the golden toad, I believe in Panama. You can Google that. It's just beautiful, literally a golden little amphibian. And it was...
Did it wipe out the species?
Mm-hmm. It's extinct.
Wow.
They saw it coming and they were unable to head it off, which was also very scary. You know, mankind gets this sort of self-centered arrogance that it's the same thought process. We always have another planet we can just go fix if we destroy this one. We always have, you know, if a creature gets in trouble, we can always just pull them into captivity and fix them, which has worked numerous times, but it doesn't always work. And it's a last like ditch effort. We don't really want to ever get to that point. Then more recently, a population of animals who really don't need any more problems, bats. And although a lot of people may not like bats, in fact, we're going to probably be spending time talking about a lot of creatures today that people don't hug and feel warm and fuzzy about. This was called white nose syndrome. And this was a fungus that was striking down bats in their wintering roosts. These animals are sort of in a torpor, a semi-hibernation. They're really slowed down. Their immune systems are slowed down. And this stuff was just going in and completely taking advantage of these animals while they're in this state and wiping out whole colonies of this fungus. And the classic sort of hallmark sign is this powdery white nose. And it's caused by Pseudogymnoascus destructans, which is a name.
Wow, fitting, that lives up to its name.
Yes, fitting for that. And they've only recently started figuring out possible approaches to controlling this syndrome. Now, bats...
That's good news.
Yeah. And now, on top of everything else...
We have the snake problem.
We have Ophidiomyces ophidioecola, which was first observed about 10 years ago. This fungal infection, and it's really funny, we do snake surveys on our private property out on the Mackinac River. It's about 160-acre property, and we have like these farm tins. Basically, it's the corrugated siding that you use to roof barns or side barns. You put about 100 of these things out, and then we go through and we just survey all the snake species we see. Mostly, the idea behind this was to just get a sense of what our snake population was in that part of Woodford County.
And then you noticed that they were suffering from
just
this fungal infection.
I think last year was the first year where we found a lot of it. And it really,
wow,
it was kind of a concern. Now, most snakes in our area are pretty solid on their populations. You look at the garter snake subspecies and the fox snakes, the milk snakes, blue racers, a lot of these guys are doing okay in their numbers. But still, when this stuff happens, we don't know what the break's going to be.
This isn't just impacting snakes in the wild. This can also potentially impact pet snakes. Now, how can that happen? I mean, are people taking their snakes out for a little stroll and they could pick up the fungus that way? Or do we possibly spread it ourselves?
The captive snake issue is, I think we're still trying to figure that out. What is the source of this? Is it being brought into the breeding areas and then put out when people obtain their snakes? We're still trying to figure out, and Dr. Matt Allender is one of the guys leading the way on this, trying to figure out what do we do with this disease once it shows up. Are there ways to treat it with the private animals that get it?
Mm-hmm.
Are there ways to go out, for instance, when we go out and do our surveys and we find several different species and several different individuals that have the lesion, the classic sort of lumpy, nasty lesions.
So if we see lumpy lesions on our snake, then we know they've got it?
If you encounter a wild snake that has those kind of lesions, that looks really bumpy, that would be a concern that this is this disease.
Okay.
In the privately owned snakes, we would still want to rule out some of the common secondary husbandry diseases we see, like bacterial sepsis. Very, really common to see snakes who, if they're a little bit stressed out in captivity, which is easy to do, all of the exotic animals take a lot of ginger care to get their husbandry right, their temperature right, their appetites right. So it's common to see bacterial diseases in snakes that are secondary to chronic immunosuppression. any snake owner, if they see their snake developing these lumps or lesions or whatnot, either if their veterinarians are comfortable doing snake medicine, make sure that they are aware of this worry about the fungal disease. If you don't have access to that, by all means, seek out the University of Illinois' veterinary medicine program. They have an excellent, excellent exotic medicine program now with fabulous doctors, including Dr. Allender, and they would be very interested in seeing any of these animals if there's the possibility that they might be having this fungal infection.
If a snake is at all maybe not feeling well, or it's got some sort of a problem, it's more susceptible to getting this fungal infection. And so if you've got a captive snake and you have to really treat it with kid gloves, then your own snake might be more susceptible to picking this up?
Yes, certainly. And that's, again, going all the way back to why do we discuss these three syndromes in the same context? Because we think they all relate possibly to some of the changes we're seeing in the climate. That these things thrive, these organisms, these fungal organisms, thrive in warmer, more humid conditions. And certainly, we know for a fact that if you look at the average temperature and humidity of bat roosts in winters 20 years ago, this stuff wouldn't survive. And if you take the average temperatures of those roosts now, they've gone up. And now this stuff can survive and just wreak havoc on a sleeping population the whole time.
We can point the finger at climate change.
Certainly, climate change must be addressed in this issue. The golden frogs, okay, these are mountain-dwelling frogs in the Central American Isthmus, the Central American area, and you have these high cloud forests that have certain temperatures and everything, and they've warmed up, and we think that's allowed for some of these fungal diseases to definitely expand their reach. We're not sure with the snakes, all of this is getting figured out right now. What if the fact is that while they're in their hibernation, their cool season hibernation, that this stuff is able to now get a hold and not get killed by cold? There's an environment now that allows it to get in, and these animals wake up with this stuff, sort of taking advantage of them in their hibernation. So that's why it's critical that we try to figure out both. In any time with new diseases, it's the same thing with human diseases. Source, environmental factors behind the source, the effect, how far-reaching is the effect, and do we have management or treatment options?
And it's way too early to expect treatment, isn't it?
They're trying some stuff out right now. Allender's team has been throwing some different things at this stuff and trying to figure it out. And again, it's very early. First is just finding something that actually works against the organism. The next stage is, can that be applied practically? So what if it's you have to treat an animal twice a day for 10 days to kill a fungus? Well, how are you going to apply that to 60,000 bats roosting in a group? You can't. There's no way. Can we make it into some sort of practical, field-worthy treatment? The private animal, like the private snake, if we find something that works, sure, we can treat that private snake twice a day as long as it is. That's going to be a much more contained, easier situation.
But treating animals in the wild?
Treating animals in the wild, which is the source, as long as we have this disease present in the wild, our private collections are going to be at risk. And you think about how animals are kept in private, how they're transported in private. These animals can spend some time in small, warm, humid containers to protect them. That's their environment that they like. And it's also exactly, it's the petri dish for this fungus to grow in. So it's really sort of critical that we figure out the source. The private part of this, we'll probably be able to figure something out a little bit easier. But when it comes to other at-risk populations of amphibians, and there's a gazillion of them in the tropical band, there's so many at-risk amphibian populations, and they are true canaries in the coal mine because they're so sensitive to environmental changes. Going back and fully addressing, with honestly addressing the role climate change may be playing in this, it should interest us because this is one of those things. All these guys are the little bricks in the foundation that we live upon, and you keep pulling bricks out and think it's not going to get at you at some point, and at some point it's going to get at you. We need to be aware of that as we move into the future, and we're going completely in the opposite direction right now. It's critical that we will figure out a way to be able to A, treat these diseases, and then B, take those management tools into the field.
That's Dr. Matt Fraker from the Prairie Oak Veterinary Center in Normal. I'm Laura Kennedy.